Now, this is one of these books.
Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go.
Oops. All right. Sorry we took off last week unexpectedly, but things happen. And we're back on the air. This is Paragon Radio. I'm your host, Bogoman. We're serving the twin super cities of Millennium and Paragon Cities. Broadcasting live from the Paragon Radio News Satellite at a high altitude, a high orbit of 0.00167 feet above sea level. Think about that. But I'm not alone. On this December 12th, as we're getting closer and closer to Christmas. Oh, my goodness. We're oh so close. But along with me tonight, some people say he's mad. Some people say he's a Viking. We just refer to him as Mad Viking.
How you doing, you crazy cookie app cats? And we celebrate the Frank Sinatra birthday.
Is it his birthday? Is it Sinatra's
birthday? It is his
birthday.
Oh,
the
chairman of the
board. The chairman of the board, the leader of the Rat Pack. Got to be careful there.
Blue Eyes, yes.
Do I have anything to play? I should have some. Nope, I don't have that. I was going to play New York, New York. I don't have that song on here. You'd think I would, being a Yankee fan, because they play there after every win. You'd think I'd have that on here. Nope. Oh, well. Happy birthday, Sinatra. Oh, well. So, I want to know what is going on here. Hold on, I got to stop playing air guitar. My news desk here, if you're in Champions Online, we're broadcasting live from the WCOC studios. In the newsroom, we're sitting in front of the news desk. I got Sylvia Grett is kneeling, bowing her head. Am I missing something?
I don't know.
I had a bad week. For those who don't know, our sometime mascot, real-life mascot, Miss Holly. Or as I call her, Miss Holly. Her real name's Holly, 14-and-a-half-year-old Maltese pet, had to be put down last week. She was really sick, sicker than we thought. And they just said, if you don't put her down, it's just going to get worse. It's going to get really bad. So, and today I just got a call. We decided to cremate her. And she's home, not the way we wanted, but her urn and ashes are here. A cute little ivory urn with her name etched in it. So she's back. The one sad thing I hate about pets. Pets love me. I love pets. It's just, this is the part I hate. Especially when she had a full life. We had her since she was a baby. And that part of it. Knowing that the joy they brought you is gone forever. But and she was a character. All right. On to other news. It's Monday. And what do you know? Biden decided to bring home that woman basketball player from Russia, and all he had to do was exchange the Merchant of Death for her. Didn't bring any other Marines home, just, you know, did this. And it's amazing because she was famous for doing Twitter feeds like, why are we playing, stop playing the national anthem, I really hate America. But that's the one he rescued. She was serving a 6-month sentence and she was guilty of sin for it. But hey, don't let her learn a lesson. No. How about the Marines who are there for life that won't be brought home? No. No. Let's bring her home. What I want to know is, how come nobody's bitching and crying about the Marines that are over there? I don't get it.
I don't know.
Let's bring home an athlete who doesn't want to support America. If you're near weird noises, we have raccoons in our attic. All right, we're breaking the fourth wall here. We have fucking raccoons in our attic, okay? Every winter this has happened. We were assured that they blocked the holes that they made, right? Well, they made a hole in our chimney, and they got in that way. And the lead raccoon, we have a camera up there to look. He's not afraid of the fucking camera. He smacks it. He goes up to the camera, pushes it around, you know, it's a video cat, like a web camera. He moves it, smacks it. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, who is this, Rocket Raccoon? I'm waiting for him. He's moving shit around there. I think he's building a gun or some kind of cannon to, like, blast a hole in the wall. It's ridiculous. There he goes. Oh, Peacefulness says, Pokemon, they are not raccoon. They're trash pandas. Yeah, they really are. Because, like, I look up there, and we had cardboard boxes up there, and, like, they're moving shit around. They're trashing the place up there. It's driving me fucking nuts. It'd be different if they were, like, outside going through our trash or whatever. Nope. They're in our attic. They're in our fucking attic. And because of this, they came in after we brought our decorations down for Christmas last year. We had to put our decorations on the back deck in totes. Illegal aliens in the attic. Possibly. Just one take. Like I said, I love animals, but these are rodents. Kill them all. I can't wait to see what damage they're causing up there. Matt, you disappeared.
I know. I'm trying to do multiple things at once here. Playing catch up to everyone going on here, we're trying to get the new stream all ready, and I am, of course, the guinea pig. I am also the one that finds a way to break things. So if they can get me connected, then they can get everyone else connected.
Peacefulness says use a tactical nuke. I would, but they're in the attic of the house I live in. How tactical of a nuke could I use? I had one job to do. What? What was this one job? This right here from it. What one job? What was this one job I had specifically? No. This is my stepbrother's job to get rid of the raccoons. Oh, a winter lord is wreaking havoc somewhere. Just what we need right now. Keep him away from us. You people have one job. Keep him away from us right now. We're doing a show. All right. So, Double Time was just here. She took off. And, of course, Peacefulness is hanging out here, discussing things with us. And over in Champions Online in the WCOC studios, we have Alan, who's sitting sadly. We have Silver Regret, bowing her head, kneeling. And we had Natalia Kromstock standing on a camera in the back, drinking. And, of course, with Alan, it's Natalia Sittens, Clarence, Mr. Nom Nom, and I'm missing one. There's a third one, isn't there? I'm missing the third one, aren't I?
Clarence.
No, I said Clarence. I said Clarence, Mr. Nom Nom.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Oh, that is Mr. Nom Nom. Okay, never mind. No, there's a third. Isn't there a... I thought there was a name for the third one. Never mind. Peacefulness, new. Pull him to the east side of the map, the far east side. Peacefulness asks, I'm new to the show. Where are you guys from? Can you expand on that question? Paragon Dawn? Originally, we're from City of Heroes. And while it was gone, we started playing Champions Online. And now we're here. I used to host a show called Save COH Radio for City of Heroes Radio, but after a few years, it became obvious that... Don't say Paragon? No. No, actually, Paragon City was here. Paragon City is here, so... What was I going to say? I started Save COH Radio right before the shutdown. Because of the shutdown, we started that show. And then when Paragon shut, when COH shut down, sadly, Paragon Chat was open, so we were doing the show from there. And then I guess we decided to do the show in Champions Online and Paragon Chat. And then we got here. Oh, okay. Peaceful says, I was an early player of COH many moons ago. Okay. Oh, yeah, I was playing COH since July of that first year it opened. A friend of mine at work, he knew I was into superhero stuff. So he goes, oh, so you play City of Heroes? I was like, no, because until now I never heard of it. So he told me it. I had a staycation in July, went to Best Buy, bought a copy of the game, loaded on my computer. Obviously had memory issues with my computer, so I had to upgrade my memory. And been playing ever since. We were old. I started COH in beta. Played until about Ouroboros came out. I played until the shutdown, from July that first year until the shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved over here. Yeah, my character should be level 50 by now, but I've been back. Yeah, real life. No, it's real life. Really, it's like I don't have time. And between two games, it's like, where do you play? Between real life happening, like you wouldn't believe, and two games, it's like, what do you do? Gee, if I wait till next year's Extra Life weekend, I can make a level 50. I should get it by the end of that one. Now, what's funny is this was my main Telecom Peacefulness. This was my main character over there. I started in July, and I got to level 50 December 23rd. So, in just about 5 months, I got it. I'm trying to think. Yeah, about 5 months I got it. And we were celebrating online, and people were like, oh, the role player's like, oh, you did that too fast. You power level. We're like, what? No, my group, we did missions every night. We didn't power level. We role played and we were in missions, we did stuff all the time. We were playing constantly. I got to say, I was really addicted to the game. When the game first came out, what server were you guys on way back? Virtue. I'm a Virtuite. You're a Virtuite, right? Matt, you need to jump.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like once I think you've done all the content at that point, I know Mad's against this. However you want to level, if you get all the badges and you've done all the stuff, you can do whatever you want at that point. And play however you want to. So, I remember I was playing the Keldian, and some guy, I knew he just started playing, he was level 7 or 8. He goes, I can't wait to play a Keldian. I was like, it's all right. I said, look, I'm not going to power level you. I played 5 characters the hard way. If you want sympathy from me, you're not getting it. Oh, really? One of our old SG mates members ran Vidyot Maps. I used Vidyot Maps. That was constantly up on my screen. That's pretty cool. Yeah, the Vidyot Maps was awesome. It was like, click on the link. That was the one you click on and you get the location. I'm like, where's the badge? Where's the badge? Click on it. So there you go. His name was Beefcake. Yeah, I think we were in, and he was a founding member of Jagged Legion. Cool. Okay, sorry about that. A little distraction here, sorry. One heck of a tank. I had a tank friend. I don't know if you guys heard of him. Grundos, Mad Cow. You know why? Every wish is a blow. The problem is there's another server. This is Rebirth and Homecoming. And I think until the two fuse together, we're not going to get the numbers. Is there a third one, Mad?
Hello? Again? Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Peace from the saying, I miss the old days of the servers. This is such a great game. Wish it would blow up again. I said, I don't think it's going to blow up because you have We're on Homecoming. Then there's Rebirth. That's another game, you know, another version of City of Heroes, right? And isn't there a third one?
There's like three or four.
Right. See, that's the problem. The community is like so far spread out. It's like we got to come together. They got to make one group of servers because this is just ridiculous. Well, yeah, you know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, united we stand. Yeah, exactly. United we stand, divided we fall. And then, I don't know if you're aware of this, right after it shut down, they had the quote-unquote attempted successor games. There were four being worked on. Two of them are completely shut down altogether. And I remember Sovereign Reign, one of our members, she calls in from time to time, was saying, City of Heroes will be back before any of those games come back on, go live. Well, here we are, and I was joking around with her, like, you're absolutely right. I get that feeling, too, sometimes. And sure enough, here we are. City of Heroes is back. What were the game? Heroes and Villains, that one. For how many years do we do the updates? We would do the updates on this show every week, religiously. And then all of a sudden, they announced, 2 years ago on New Year's Day that the vision that they had for the game isn't the way it's going. They're stopping and they're going to reboot everything. Meanwhile, they hadn't even come out with anything yet. So it's like, how can you reboot if you hadn't started yet? So that shut down. And was it Valiant? Was that the other one? Man, mm-hmm. What was the other game?
Valiant
was doing it. Was doing an alpha, but they're really copying a lot of shit from City of Heroes. I don't see that going anywhere. City of Titans is the third one. That one is still progressing.
And so is Ship of Heroes.
Oh, God, Ship of Heroes. I don't. Something about that game, I don't see it lasting. I don't know how it's lasted already. That to me is like, I know, right? Like 20 years from now, that game will still be around somehow. I don't know how. But what was the reboot name? City of Titans. Yeah, Talk of Titans. Yeah, City of Titans is the reboot. As a matter of fact, cityoftitans.com. And you pay a fee. And right now, the island, the character creator is up for that one. And you can do a walk around on parts of the island that they have. I'm trying to think what else. I don't know. They're all former players of City of Heroes. If you remember War Cabot from Virtue, he's one of the guys on City of Titans. If you go to cityoftitans.com, their forums, they have a list of the developers. There's a whole list of people involved in this one. And some of the guys on City of Titans, they actually worked for the original City of Heroes, so... No, Cryptic Studios is actually doing Champions Online. Obviously not Cryptic Studios. They are debunked now. No, Cryptic Studios, when they left City of Heroes, they went to and they did Champions Online. Yes. As a matter of fact, a lot of people may not know this. Originally, City of Heroes was supposed to be a Marvel game. A Marvel-based game. And
turn off the games for a little bit. I'm still on. I just got to turn off the games for a little bit.
Okay, so you're on Skype with me. All right. Yep. So And then what happened? Marvel bailed out the last second, and they're like, well, shit, what are we going to do? So what they did was they couldn't to get the license. This is what happened. The original developers took their Champions superhero role-playing tabletop campaign, Statesman, if you remember Statesman, and all those guys. I can't remember all the rest of the guys. But like the main trainers, those were their characters from Champions, the tabletop role-playing game, superhero. Yeah, Jack, what was Jack? Jack Emmert, thank you. Yeah, Jack Emmert and company, yes. Thank you. Those guys, that they had a champion, like most of us. I played Champions in the 80s. I was a Champions GM. Superhero Champions, a superhero role-playing game, the tabletop game. I think quite a few people played that game. Matter of fact, we did play Champions now for a little while. And that became the basis for City of Heroes. And then they sold it. Jack Emmert left and a few others left. And I think what's funny is he wound up working on Champions Online. Just think, if things would have went differently, we would have had Champions Online to begin with. But is he still working on Champions Online, or did he move on to another project?
He is on DCUO.
Oh, he went to DCUO now. Okay. Wow. Okay. Good for him. Okie doke. So there you go. There you go. Oh, so how is Champions Online different? All right, peacefulness one. The level cap is 40. Two, you can have what they call freeform characters, where basically you can pick and choose whatever powers you want. You level your powers up, your abilities and your powers with gear to have stats in them. I'm trying to think what else. Let's see. Instead of a city, you have Millennium City as the starting zone, and then you come back to it after a while. You have the Canadian wilderness, the desert. Is the gear like WoW? I never played WoW.
Good question.
Yeah, I don't know. I never played one. Like, you get the gear and you could slot it up. Like, some of the gear you could slot up with how you want to increase your stats. Like, you have to choose, what do they call it? I can't remember what they call it. Help me out, Champions players. I'm fumbling here. Yeah, that's true. Well, maybe at the higher levels. Right. Yeah, the pen and paper game has no class system. Right. This one, you're choosing a type of class, and that's the basis for your stats. Like top three stats, and sometimes maybe your fourth stat. And then you choose, why can't I remember what they're called? Oh, my God, I'm doing horrible here. And as you gain levels, you can increase your stats. Hold on. I need something here. Hold on. I'll get the name for it. Okay, so you get an innate characteristic that's usually based on what your character is built around. That'll give you a basic set of stats. Usually three of them are plus 10. One will be plus 8. The other ones are 5. And then you get a primary stat and then two secondary stats, and those will rank up with you. And then you get up to 6 talents. If you choose one, you get plus 8 to an ability. Some give you plus 5 to 2 abilities. I think some other ones give you like plus 3s. And then, like I said, again, with your equipment, it boosts your stats up. So it's free to download. Give it a shot. You might like it. Oh, yes. Champions Online is an MMO. Yes. Yes. That's the other MMO. As a matter of fact, when City of Heroes closed down, they offered a double XP weekend. And quite a few people from City of Heroes went over there when it closed down. So, sorry, Natalia. Sorry, Silver Grid. Just hoping Dad can get out of the hospital on either Wednesday or Thursday. But he will still be on hospice. That's all right. I just found out my brother-in-law has COVID. And my mom was over there all day, helping my sister out all day Friday, helping with doing some Christmas stuff. And now she's feeling like crap, having all the symptoms my brother-in-law has. And my nephew. My stepbrother's downstairs feeling sick as all hell. Yeah, I can't think. We're trying to figure out what game. You can't compare it to a game. You can't compare City of Heroes to a game either. Every game is unique into itself, so. All right, nice meeting you, Peacefulness. Yeah, just catch you next show. Yeah, well, if you have the link for the show, you can catch the rest of the replay at any time this week or next week. I'm old and I have to prep for work tomorrow. I have to get up at 0400 tomorrow. Taking my mom to dialysis in the morning. Ugh. I say. Yes, I say ugh. All right. So let's get down to business. As I felt that, just got news my kidneys have gone to stage 4. Oh, crap, I'm so sorry. So dialysis is in my future. I'm sorry about that. Good luck, Peacefulness. Good luck with that. All right. So on with some superhero news for everybody. Okay. Some Batman news I just saw. DC confirms voice cast for Batman, the doom that came to Gotham. Warner Brothers Animation has assembled another top-tier voice cast for its next DC movie. Via The Hollywood Reporter, the studio just announced the full cast, the full call sheet for its upcoming adaptation of DC's Batman, the doom that came to Gotham graphic novel. The film will star David Guntoli in the headlining role Bruce Wayne Batman. Fans might recognize him as the star of A Million Little Things, which currently airs on ABC. Before this, he played Detective Nick Burkhardt in all 6 seasons of NBC's Grimm. I know who he is. Okay, he leads a cast that also features Tati Gabrielle of Uncharted as Kylie Kane, John DiMaggio, Futurama, we know him, Bender, as James Gordon. I'm sorry. Like, James Gordon, you let the bat do his thing or bite my shiny metal ass. Commissioner? Patrick Fabian, Better Call Saul, as Harvey Dent, and Jason Marsden pulling double duty as Dick Grayson and young Bruce Wayne. Christopher Gorham, who previously voiced Barry Allen the Flash in earlier DC projects, is also lending his voice to the film as Oliver Queen / Green Arrow. Brian George will reprise his role from Batman the Killing Joke as Alfred Pennyworth. Additional cast members include Karen Brar as Sanjay J. Tawdy, David Dasmalchian as Grendon, Naveed Nagabin as Ra's al Ghul, Emily O'Brien as Talia al Ghul, and Martha Wayne, double duty there, Tim Roos as Lucius Fox, Matthew Waterson as Jason Blood Etrigan, Jeffrey Combs as Kirk Langstrom, William Salyers as Oswald Cobblepot, Gideon Adlon as Oracle, and Darren DePaul as Thomas Wayne. Originally released as a three-issue Elseworlds miniseries between late 2000 and early 2001, The Doom That Came to Gotham was co-written by Hellboy creator Mike Mignola and Richard Pace with art by Troy Nixie. Naturally, the story allowed Mignola to put a signature Lovecraft-inspired spin on the Batman mythos. Set in the 1920s, the series found Bruce Wayne battling new supernatural threats after accidentally reviving an ancient evil being. The title was a reference to H.P. Lovecraft's own short story, The Doom That Came to Sarnath. DC announced The Doom That Came to Gotham during last summer's San Diego Comic-Con festivities. Sam Liu and Christopher Berkeley are co-directing the film, with Liu also serving as a producer. Jay's Ritchie, a veteran of Teen Titans Go and DC Superhero Girls, penned the script. Warner Brothers still hasn't announced a release date. However, it will most likely premiere sometime after the next animated DC movie, Legion of Superheroes, hits Blu-ray and digital on February 7th. DC is also releasing a new trade paperback edition of the original graphic novel next April. Okay. Oh, I'm excited for this voice cast. And I want to get a copy of this book because I missed it the first time somehow. I don't know how. Okay. On to movie news. Gil Kenan will direct the next Ghostbusters movie. Last June, Ghostbusters Afterlife director Jason Reitman and his co-writer Gil Kenan revealed that they were co-writing the next Ghostbusters movie. At the time, it was assumed that Reitman would return to direct as well. However, Deadline has announced that Kenan will be taking over the sequel as the new director. Kenan is perhaps best known for directing the animated film Monster House. He's also helmed City of Ember, the Poltergeist remake, and A Boy Called Christmas. It's an absolute honor to pick up the proton pack and step behind the camera for the next chapter of the Spengler family saga, said Kenan in a statement. I just wish I could go back to 1984 and tell the kid in the sixth row of the Man Valley West that one day he was going to get to direct a Ghostbusters film. A few years ago, my father handed me the keys to Ecto-1, and together we made Ghostbusters Afterlife, added Reitman. Words will never express how grateful I am to have made a film with my father by my side. It's now time to hand those keys to my creative partner and fellow Ghostbuster, Gil Kenan, a brilliant director who will keep the Spengler spirit alive. I can only hope to provide him the same productorial care and support that my father showed me. Additionally, Deadline's report indicates that Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, and the Afterlife ensemble cast are back for the sequel. Presumably, McKenna Grace, Finn Wolfhard, Logan Kim, and Celeste O'Connor are still the key components of that ensemble. The story for the sequel is believed to be set in New York, of all places. What a surprise. The next Ghostbusters movie doesn't have an official release date yet. However, it will begin filming next year for a December 2023 release. Just in time for next Christmas. Okay. The Boys, A-Train, reveals Spotify's top songs of 2022. For the last week, social media feeds have been filled with users sharing their Spotify Wrapped, revealing which songs and artists dominated their earbuds in 2022. So, naturally, this is the perfect opportunity for The Boys to jump in with its signature brand of corporate satire. It shouldn't surprise anyone that Vought International has its own music streaming service, conveniently named Spotify. And in a new parody video, A-Train, played by Jesse T. Usher, recaps the top five songs that listeners couldn't get enough of this year. At the bottom of the list is Rock My Kiss by Supersweet, the soup boy band fronted by Annie January / Starlight's ex-boyfriend, Supersonic, a.k.a. Drummer Boy. Supersonic was famously murdered by Homelander in The Boys Season 3 for conspiring with Starlight. And since A-Train is the one who basically got him killed by telling the Seven's leader about their collusion, it's a little jarring to watch him eulogize Supersonic in the video. But what else would you expect given the series' dark tone? Even more shocking is the number four song, Soulja Boy's cover of Rapture by Blondie. Seeing the former leader of Payback on the list is bound to ruffle some feathers, considering his well-publicized betrayal of Vought in Season 3. But, as A-Train himself admits, the track is a certified banger. Okay, and there is a video. I'll post the link in a minute. You can watch the full countdown via the company's Twitter account below. Finally, in a not entirely unexpected turn of events, the remaining songs in the list are all A-Train originals with Hide Your Girlfriend, Run Through Your Heart, and Faster, claiming the top three spots. Whether or not he achieved this without Vought tampering with its own algorithms is certainly up for debate. Regardless, the sinister double meanings of the first two songs shouldn't be lost on anyone who watches the show. Currently, the cast and crew of The Boys are deep into production on Season 4. Amazon still hasn't announced a date for the series' return. However, the new episodes are expected to drop in 2023, but after the debut of the show's upcoming spinoff, Gen V. And for those interested, I will post that link now. I'll post that in Coalition here in COH. Listening, and over here in CO, I'll post in Local for you guys. And over in Dawn Radio for those people listening elsewhere. How are we doing on time? Okay, we got plenty of time. We got a few more stories to get through. Okay, next up. DC Studios is rumored to be moving on from the Snyderverse. The ascension of James Gunn and Peter Safran to the top of DC Studios gave fans hope that the story DC comic book heroes could be revitalized on the big screen. However, Gunn and Safran's plans to move forward may also mean that the DC Extended Universe created by director Zack Snyder will come to a close. Via The Hollywood Reporter, Gunn and Safran are rumored to be considering a truly fresh start that would have no baggage from any previous regimes as they set about resetting how DC movies and shows are made. That would presumably mean recasting the major roles in the DC film universe, including Henry Cavill's Superman. THR notes that Cavill was not incorrect when he said he was back as Superman last month. Prior to Gunn and Safran taking over DC Studios, plans were in development for a Man of Steel sequel with Cavill in the lead. Regardless, previous reports have indicated that the project has not made any progress since then. Cavill may not even have a formal deal to return. Additionally, THR put forth the wild idea that Jason Momoa could remain with the new DC Universe after Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. Instead of playing Aquaman, the report suggests that Momoa may play Lobo, an intergalactic mercenary and antihero. The big problem with that scenario is that Lobo isn't exactly well-known among the general public. The Aquaman sequel is far more likely to be a hit than a Lobo movie. As a case study, even Dwayne Johnson's star power couldn't make Black Adam a mega blockbuster. Another inherent issue is that all of DC's 2023 movies are built on the foundation of Snyder's DCEU. Shazam, Fury of the Gods, The Flash, Blue Beetle, and Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom all take place in the continuity. Even the second season of Gunn's HBO Max series, Peacemaker, is a part of that world. Simply abandoning it may only invite fan uproar. THR also notes that Gunn and Safran will unveil their DC plan to Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav next week. For now, all we know for sure is that Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman 3 treatment was rejected by Gunn and Safran because it didn't fit in with their plans. Gunn and Safran are also likely to interfere with Matt Reeves' plans for the Batman sequel and its HBO Max spinoffs. Well, shit almighty. And speaking of which, James Gunn responds to DC rumors, saying, "We're still just beginning." Until last week, the biggest DC news of the year was James Gunn and Peter Safran taking over DC Studios. However, Just over 1 month on the job, the duo has reportedly canceled Wonder Woman 3, and they are rumored to be considering a clean break from the Snyderverse's DC Extended Universe. There are even conflicting reports about whether Black Adam 2 will go forward. Now, Gunn has responded to the rumors via The Hollywood Reporter. So, as for the story yesterday in The Hollywood Reporter, some of it's true, some of it's half true, some of it's not true, and some of it we haven't even decided yet whether it's true or not, wrote Gunn on his Twitter account. Although this first month at DC has been fruitful, building the next 10 years of story takes time, and we're still just beginning. Peter and I chose to helm DC Studios knowing we were coming into a fractious environment, both in the stories being told and in the audience itself, and it would be an unavoidable transitional period as we moved into telling a cohesive story across film, TV animation, and gaming, continued Gunn. But in the end, the drawbacks of that transitional period were dwarfed by the creative possibilities and the opportunity to build upon what has worked in DC so far and help rectify what has not. Gunn also acknowledged that some of their decisions will not be popular. We know we are not going to make every single person happy every step of the way, but we can promise everything we do is done in the service of the story and in the service of the DC characters. We know you cherish, and we have cherished, our whole lives. As for more answers about the future of the DCU, I will sadly have to ask you to wait. We are giving these characters and the stories the time and attention they deserve, and we ourselves still have a lot more questions to ask and answer. Gunn and Safran are reportedly making their DC plans known to Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav, I said next week. However, fans may have to wait longer than that to learn about the future of the DCU. Okay, now as we said, Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman 3 is not going forward. Earlier this week, Gal Gadot shared a social media message which suggested the news about her future as Wonder Woman was around the corner. However,
all right,
that future is
I will be right back. I got to take care of
that. Okay, fine.
Okay,
just be that
sorry.
Way while I'm reading about Gal Gadot. How
okay.
dare you? I'm just joking. All right. Hurry back. And joining me in COH on the steps of City Hall, Gypsy Doom, and of course my sidekick, Fogo Spring. Why am I not holding a torch? Why is it holding a torch? All right, there we go. Okay, so let's get down to this Wonder Woman news once and for all. However, that future, okay, as we said, director Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman 3 has been shut down by the new DC studio heads, James Gunn and Peter Safran. According to the report, Jenkins and Geoff Johns recently submitted their treatment for the Wonder Woman 3 script that two had previously co-written Wonder Woman 1984. Regardless, Gunn and Safran reportedly told Jenkins that her take on the sequel did not fit in with their larger plans for the DC universe. This also means that Jenkins' sequel is considered dead in its current incarnation. Additionally, THR notes that Gunn and Safran's DC plans are rumored to involve a clean break from the Snyderverse. That would include shuttering plans for Henry Cavill to return as Superman in another movie. Even Gadot and Jason Momoa's respective time as Wonder Woman and Aquaman could come to an end. But, for being honest, no one expects Ezra Miller to be back as Barry Allen beyond the Flash movie. Miller is simply a never-ending public relations nightmare whose legal problems have yet to be resolved, and we've covered that many, many times on this show. However, if Gunn and Safran elect to shutter the Snyderverse, it will be complicated by the fact that all of 2023's DC movies are firmly in the universe started by Zack Snyder, as we've discussed already. But for now, that's what the chatter is saying. Gunn and Safran are expected to unveil their DC outline, as we said, next week. However, maybe sometime before we know what's going on. Now, there's a follow-up story. There's more details emerge this past Saturday about Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman 3 exit. Okay, so earlier this week, as we said, word broke that Patty Jenkins, Wonder Woman 3 was canceled. Subsequent reports indicated that Jenkins refused to make any changes to the treatment that she co-wrote with Geoff Johns. However, a report from The Wrap sheds additional light on her Wonder Woman 3 exit. And according to the outlet, Jenkins' contentious relationship wasn't with DC Studios, James Gunn, and Peter Safran. Instead, she clashed with Warner Brothers Film Group's co-CEOs Michael DeLuca and Pamela Abdy. The Wrap indicates that DeLuca and Abdy were the ones who decided that Jenkins' treatment for the sequel didn't work, although the report also notes that Gunn and Safran agreed with their assessment. In response, Jenkins reportedly told DeLuca and Abdy that she thought quote unquote, that they were wrong, that they didn't understand her, didn't understand the character, didn't understand character arcs, and didn't understand what Jenkins was trying to do. To underscore her point, and to perhaps burn a bridge along the way, the Rap Source claims that Jenkins went so far as to email DeLuca a link to Wikipedia's post for character arcs. Jenkins was also said to be against the idea of allowing Gunnar Safran any say about her vision for the film. Regardless, Jenkins was still invited to come up with another pitch for the studio. However, she refused and left the project altogether. This is not the first time that Jenkins has had high-profile creative clashes with studio executives. Jenkins was briefly attached to direct Thor: The Dark World for Marvel in 2011, before departing 2 months later. More recently, Lucasfilm signed Jenkins to direct a Star Wars Rogue Squadron film, but that project also stalled out over competing visions for the film. The Wrap indicates that Jenkins' departure doesn't necessarily mean that Gal Gadot won't play Wonder Woman again, but for now, the long-term DC Studios plans of Gunn and Safran have not been finalized. Okay, and now this one came across. Netflix is going to release Legendary's live-action version of My Hero Academia movie. So we can officially add one more anime adaptation to Netflix's upcoming slate. Last year, Legendary announced plans to produce a live-action film based on Kohei Horikoshi's My Hero Academia with Shinsuke Sato sitting in the director's chair. Now, Deadline brings word that Netflix has landed the movie's distribution rights. The latest report also confirms that Joby Harold, the head writer behind Lucasfilm's Obi-Wan Kenobi series, has come on board to write the film's screenplay. Harold was previously a co-writer on Army of the Dead with Zack Snyder and Shay Hatton. He also worked on The Flash and Transformers: Rise of the Beasts, both of which will hit theaters next year. Horikoshi launched his original My Hero Academia manga in 2014. The story imagines a world where superhuman abilities, otherwise known as quirks, are commonplace. Around 80% of the population exhibits some kind of power. Unfortunately, Izuku Midoriya isn't so lucky. Although he dreams of becoming a superhero just like his idol, All Might, Izuku was seemingly born without a quirk of his own. But after meeting All Might in person, he finally gets his wish and begins attending the world's most prestigious school for heroes in training. In 2016, Horikoshi's series made the jump to anime. The show is currently in the midst of its sixth season, with all episodes streaming on Hulu in the United States. Additionally, the anime has spawned three theatrical films that hit Japanese theaters, in 2018, 2019, and 2021. My Hero Academia marks Sato's English language debut as a director, having previously helmed Japanese features like The Princess Blade, Bleach, and Kingdom. Mary Parent and Alex Garcia are producing the new film on behalf of Legendary Toho Company, Ltd., is handling the movie's theatrical release in Japan. And that's all the news I had for tonight. I thought Mel would be here. And Gypsy Dune keeps saying, freedom has come home to Paragon City. On City of Heroes. I guess so. Okay, so we got 5 minutes left. I don't know if Matt is back yet. Nope. No, Mad Viking. Sorry, just taking a drink. Went in my whistle. So here we are on the holidays. And I will say again, if you haven't yet, if you have the opportunity, go see, well, it's online, see A Christmas Story Christmas. It's a most worthy sequel to the original. Don't miss out on that one. Well, I didn't mean going down, Natalia. She just ran off. Okay, so with that being said, I think we're going to start a few minutes early. Oh, Sylvia Gritz says she thought she loved it. Very cool. Yes, I thought it was great. I can't wait to watch it again. Okay, so with that being said, I think it's time we enter the tomb and get the tome. That's right. It's that time, ladies and gentlemen. Going to start a few minutes early. Oh, hold on a second. Long day, sorry. In the annals of comic book history, there have been many, many, many supervillains. The Legion of Doom, the Serpent Society, the Secret Six, whatever they're called, the Legion of the Injustice Society of America, the Batman's, the Bat Villains, the Flash's Rogue Gallery. It's the host, Dr. Doom, Galactus, Thanos, Darkseid. But not these guys, for these are oddball criminals from comic book history. If one of these are your arch-villain, you know you're doing something wrong. For these are the Legion of Regrettable Supervillains. Let me see if Matt's back yet. Nope. Matt, you here? Okay, I'll start. Make your comments as necessary. Okay, so first up, he is an enemy of 7-1-1. Created by George Brenner. Debuted in Police Comics number 5, Quality Comics December 1941. Not to be confused with Cinderblock Fox or Paving Stone Bear. Is, quote, "You're ruined and too old to recoup your fortunes. You're better off dead, fool. So die." His name, Brickbat. With some supervillains, you find yourself pondering which came first, the concept or the name. Did the creator have a great idea for a bad guy and then build a nom de villainy to suit it? Or was inspiration sparked by an innocently uttered word overheard in idle conversation? With Brickbat, very little guesswork is involved. A crook who dresses like a bat and strikes his victims with bricks is not a concept that exists independently of the word. Liberally armed with his weapon of choice, Brickbat wore a bat-eared mask reminiscent of a much more popular crime fighter residing at a rival comics publisher. Less confusion reigned between the two blue-hued, pointy-eared cowls. Brickbat completed his outfit with a lime-green blazer and slacks. Consider it the supervillain equivalent of the mullet. Business below the neck, party up top, and pockets full of bricks. Bearing on his person any number of gimmicked breakaway bricks, each filled with fatal gas, Brickbat's M.O., was to rob his victims blind and then murder them by chucking the insidious blocks of clay and poison right at them. The bricks were the creation of an unnamed scientist whom Brickbat promptly murdered. The science of gas-filled masonry has never recovered. Of course, it seems obvious that a regular brick would be a more useful weapon. For starters, you could use a real brick again and again. With one-shot poison bricks, however, you have to carry a bunch around, and if you want to murder more than one person. And where exactly is Brickbat carrying all those bricks? He seems to have several on him at any given time. Those green slacks must have deep pockets. Perhaps the only advantage of fake bricks filled with deadly gas is that accuracy isn't required. But 7-1-1, an incarcerated superhero who escapes from prison every night to battle crime, finds a way to negate this advantage in the sole confrontation. 7-1-1 stands next to an open window as he taunts the heavy-handed crook. Enraged, Brickbat empties his entire quiver at the sanguine-suited superhero, and he misses each time. As 7-1-1 dodges, and the deadly bricks pass harmlessly through the glass. Hopefully, no one happened to be walking through the alley below that window. Once Brick Bat is out of ammo, he's subject to 7-1 soul superpower, punching crooks in the head until they fall down. Okay, sounds like superpower. Once vanquished, Brick Bat is committed to the same prison that holds 7-1-1 in his civilian identity. Okay, next up. Hold on. Okay. Our next is a Silver Age entry. Okay, this villain is an enemy of Rip Hunter, Time Master. He was created by Jack Miller and Bill Eli. Debuted in Rip Hunter, Time Master, number 16. DC Comics, September-October 1963. The TO, DNR, basically an evil version of Bill and Ted's Big Adventure. All right, the quote. I, too, have admired famous criminals of the past. Why don't we pick them up and form a criminal league of the ages? Okay, it's not one villain, it's a group. And they are known as the Criminal League of Time. Give me a moment, folks. Okay. The Criminal League of Time. Every civilization has made infamous the names of its greatest criminals. History is well populated with murderers, thieves, and all sorts of bad eggs, remembered for their audacity, flamboyance, or sheer evil. Luckily for us, the worst criminals are separated by decades and centuries. Unfortunately for Rip Hunter and his crew of Time Masters, one opponent makes an effort to collect them all under one roof. The Time Masters were a quartet of era-hopping adventurers consisting of Jeff Smith, Bonnie Baxter, Bonnie's younger brother Corky, and their boss, Rip Hunter, inventor of the Time Sphere. The foursome bounced around history, occasionally encountering a cast of anachronistic oddities and meddling aliens. During a rest period between adventurers, the Time Sphere is hijacked by a crook with a devious plan. Lars Creel, number one on the most wanted list, is on the run from the cops. Recognizing the Time Master's combination cabin laboratory from a magazine article, he takes junior member Corky hostage and orders him to fire up the Time Sphere. When to... Creel, as it turns out, is a big fan of 16th century English highwayman Captain Harry Hawkins. So the fugitive decides to trek back 400 years into the past. We should make a great team, he enthuses. Hawkins, however, comes up with a better plan. Rather than forming a mere crime duo, they travel back and forth through the time stream to collect, as he describes it, a criminal league of the ages. After a short time jaunt to pick up Baron de Koven, the Black Knight, Hawkins muses, just think, the three of us, and perhaps another like Attila the Hun, going into the far distant future to buy fantastic weapons to use for raiding all eras. Too bad they never make it that far. Rip and the remaining pair of Time Masters show up in their spare Time Sphere to stop the Criminal League's insidious plan. What follows is a battle between Time Spheres, culminating with Bonnie firing a machine gun from the open door of one toward the crooks piloting the other. No injuries are incurred. The villains surrender. So in the end, the Criminal League of Time fizzled with only three members. But there's no guarantee they won't regroup. After all, they've got plenty of time. And for our last one tonight, we go to the modern age. Okay, this one is an enemy of the West Coast Avengers. Created by Steve Englehart and Al Milgrom. Debuted in West Coast Avengers Volume 2, Number 17, Marvel Comics, February 1987. Hold on a second. Okay, sorry about that. It says here, let's see what it is. Spiciness level. Muy caliente. The quote, life hard in desert, survival mean power. I speak of the desert dwellers. Hold on a second, guys. Emergency call. Hold on. Are you kidding me? Jesus, Christmas. Sorry about that, folks. Okay, back to the action. Okay, hold on. Let me see if Matt's back in the other zone. Oh, Immortal Paladin has joined us. Let me see what's going on. Hold on. Focus versus Brickbat, yes. Sorry, I got to catch up on everything. No, Paladin, we don't know when Brickbat... Paladin, can you hear me? We don't know when it's going to be back. Matt is working on it now. Hold on a second, guys. I'm going to give him the link for the show. Sorry. Sorry for the hold up, folks. Just give me a second. Okay. Where am I? I'm down here. Okay. So I said the desert dwellers. Okay, so here we go. So, the East Coast of the United States has always boasted the highest density of superheroes and supervillains, more than likely because the majority of comic book publishing is headquartered in and around New York City. So, it's a pleasant surprise when underrepresented portions of the globe are assigned their own supertypes, even if they're the evil creations of a wicked mind. When the would-be world-conquering alien being Dominus stationed himself in the Arizona desert, theoretically safe from Earth's superhero population, he would have been remiss not to arm himself with powerful henchmen. So, the extraterrestrial engineered a team of villains from what was handy, the flora and fauna of the Sonoran desert. Saving him a little work was Sunstroke, first member of his desert dwellers. Sunstroke acted as the singular leader of the quartet, second only to Dominus. Every successful world conqueror has to delegate. The remaining members were crafted out of regional materials, including Butte, a solid granite strong woman who was effectively indestructible. Butte not only boasted tremendous strength and near invulnerability, but also provided handy camouflage when needed. On one occasion, she hid a beleaguered Sunstroke merely by covering him with her body. Gila, a mutated Gila monster who could walk, speak, and fight like a man. Like his four-legged counterparts, Gila would deliver dangerously venomous bites and possessed leathery skin that made him tough to defeat. Next up, oh, that's funny. And we have Cactus, whose name says it all. Spiny, green, and caryophyllies. Good Lord, I can't talk tonight. Caryophyllalis. I said it. Caryophyllalis. There you go. My mouth is working again. Cactus appeared to have been mutated from a saguaro plant. Strong and resilient, Cactus could also regrow limbs and fire deadly barrages of needles. Initially known as Dominus's minions, the team acquired the name Desert Dwellers after they first appeared, or after their first appearance. When it came time to create additional henchmen, apparently Dominus's imagination resources failed him. Instead of further exploiting the vast diversity of the desert biome, say recruiting javelinas, coyotes, jumping koala, or mesquite for his crew, or capitalizing on meteorological fixtures like the monsoon or sandstorm, Dominus merely made 49 copies of each of his initial minions. Perhaps that brand of lazy and curiosity explains why he was ultimately defeated by the West Coast Avengers. Another notable exception to East Coast centricity, and his army scattered to the winds. Okay. And there you have it, folks. I'm putting it back. I'm just going to get those words out tonight. I could read more until Mad comes back. I don't know what happened to him. It's up to you guys. Because I know we weren't on last week. I could do another run. Say yes, say no. Either way. We got about 17 minutes left. So it's up to you guys. You want me to read more? Somebody say something? Somebody answer me? All right, we get Silver Regret saying yes. I'll give it 60 more seconds. Oh, hey, George Mosley. Howdy. Sorry, I didn't see you before. Okay, we got one yes. Oh, okay, Paul Chris Rangers, let's go ahead. That's two. Okay, just give me a moment here. Okay, I guess we'll get started. Back to the golden age we go. All right, this one. He's an enemy of Green Arrow. Created by Steve Brody and George Papp. Debuted in World's Finest Volume 1, number 24, DC Comics, September 1946. Not to be confused with The Human Target, Deadshot, Bullseye, and The Enemy of Daredevil. He quotes, "Try to hit the bullseye. It costs you nothing unless you miss." I speak of none other than Bullseye. And this one has a dash between his name. It's Bulls-I. Okay. Fairly or not, superhero archer Green Arrow has been accused of copying from Batman. He's a wealthy millionaire playboy with a quiver full of utility belt-like trick arrows. As a red-shirted kid sidekick makes his headquarters in the Arrow Cave, he drives the arrow car, flies the aeroplane, and is summoned by the police by use of an arrow signal. He even has a white-faced clown-themed nemesis, Bullseye. One factor that differentiates Batman's arch-foe, the Joker, from Green Arrow's baleful buffoon, however, is tactics. Bullseye is just begging to be hit. A circus acrobat and career criminal, the figure who eventually becomes Bullseye is known at first by his stage name, Lipo. You can see why Bullseye seemed like an upgrade. After escaping from prison through the laundry sewer, whatever that unfortunate sounding thing may be, Lipo goes on the lam. Hiding out at a local carnival, he disguises his most wanted features behind clown makeup and provides a living target for amused patrons armed with blunt but heavy projectiles. It's at the carnival that Bullseye's prowess for not getting hit blooms. Incredible, blurts out a witness to his proficient dodging. I doubt if even a bullet could catch him. That may be true. Bullseye manages to avoid everything that is thrown at him, including punches. Realizing that he struck upon an ego-satisfying new criminal gimmick, he positions himself as the natural nemesis of the world's greatest archer, whose accuracy is his stock in trade. And in order to really taunt Green Arrow, Bullseye adorns the front of his clownish smock with a bullseye, of course. Bullseye makes a half dozen published sorties against Green Arrow and his kid sidekick Speedy, evading them more often than not. In their final confrontation, he repeats his signature taunt, "Try to hit the bullseye, only 10 cents, and adds, "That's another Don Giomi, making 1,017 altogether." Bullseye didn't enjoy the longevity or infamy of the Joker, and unlike most clown-themed criminals in comics, the pernicious Pagliaccio didn't use humorous weapons or death traps. No exploding pies or electrified joy buzzers for him. Bullseye's only motivation is merely to not be hit, which may have stunted his supervillain career. But doesn't it make him a lot like the rest of us? Okay. Oh, I just had it here. Okay, here we go to the Silver Age. Cesar has joined us in the studios of Champions Online at WCOC Studios. Hello, Cesar. Okay. Okay, this next villain is an enemy of the Black Cat and Black Kitten, created by Lee Elias and Bob Haney, debuted in Black Cat number 28, Harvey Comics, April 1951. Day job, a Paul Bunyan impersonator. The quote, exclamation point. The Crimson Raider doesn't speak, except for this confused punctuation. Okay, then, of course, the villain is the Crimson Raider. Is it possible to pity the villain? That is the question posed by the Crimson Raider, an evil pirate cursed by the devil himself to toil fruitlessly in the living world and to become an unwieldy giant in the bargain. The Crimson Raider was an alias for Al Ghori, a vicious pirate known and feared on the seven seas. Despite his terrifying reputation, Ghori was no less susceptible to violence than the next man when he is ambushed while disembarking his ship. He dies on the docks, having never even drawn his cutlass, because a lifetime of high seas piracy rendered Ghori unfit for celestial glory. He's promptly turned away from the pearly gates. Wandering downstairs, he finds that he's not wanted even in the fiery underworld. He was told, explains an old crone as she relates the story, should he be able to locate an honest namesake to whom he could turn over his ill-gotten booty, once he would use these riches for the betterment of mankind, he would then be allowed to serve out his term of penance in the bowels of hell. Why anyone would work so hard to get where the Crimson Raider was heading is a mystery. Perhaps to rent it was cheap. Back in the mortal world, Ghori gathers and hides his prodigious fortune of gold ducats and spends decade after decade seeking someone who shares his surname on whom he can unload the treasure. Invariably, though, the vast wealth corrupts the recipient, which means that Ghori has to recollect every coin and start again. This requires a few murders along the way, a fact made easier with each failure thanks to a hidden condition of Satan's deal. Ghori grows a foot taller every time he fails to resolve the curse. After 300 years of poor choices, the Crimson Raider is now a titanic giant, leaving corpses of his victims scattered across the tops of telephone poles or on cliffsides. When Hollywood's glamorous detective star Linda Turner, a.k.a. the Black Cat, and her sidekick Kit become involved with the mystery, they're quick to make short work of the giant, pelting him with rocks, dodging his mighty blows, and even causing the Colossus to clothesline himself on telephone wires. The Black Cat and Kit confront him at the site of his hidden treasure. A crumbling cliff seals the Raider's doom, sending him plummeting to the beach, where he lands upon his own giant-sized sword. Gone for good, muses the Black Cat, his terrible wanderings ended by his own cutlass. Whether this means he found peace or torment in the afterlife is unclear. For all we know, the Crimson Raider just had to start all over again, 12 inches taller this time. Okay, there's a roll call section here. Other oversized no-good nicks include Giganta, a frequent foe of both Wonder Woman and the Super Friends. Atlas, formerly Power Man and the Smuggler, was an ionically amped supervillain who made a go at reforming later in his career while King Size fought for giants' rights. The most dynamite of the colossal villains may have been the Claw, a fang-toothed, goblin-like, sometimes ally of the Axis powers, who frequently clashed with Golden Age superheroes Daredevil, the Silver Streak, and the Ghost. Okay, there you go. Where's Tom again? 8 minutes, and that brings us to... Oh, where's Mad when we need him? Okay. This one is an enemy of Howard the Duck, created by Steve Gerber and Mary Severin. Debuted in Howard the Duck number 15, Marvel Comics, August 1977. And this villain's favorite TV show is The Gong Show. His quote, "None dares challenge my tintinnabulatory powers." He is none other than Dr. Bong, B-O-N-G. Despite having what appears to be a kid-friendly facade, Howard the Duck was, in fact, a book intended for adults. Hiding behind Howard's Looney Tunes-like proportions and Donald Duck-style fits of anger was a cultural and political satire intended for mature audiences. Still, among Howard's many farcical foes, like the paranoid and hypochondriac Kidney Lady, or Pro Rata, the mad financial wizard, Dr. Bong might be the most traditional. You may have noticed that the character's name obliquely references pot-smoking paraphernalia, which likely resonated with the book's intended college-age audience. Part Dr. Doom, part Dr. Moreau, and part, well, Bell, Dr. Bong possesses much of the standard supervillain kit. He inhabits a terrifying castle on a remote island, is served by genetically mutated monsters, and can paralyze or kill with the terrible ringing of his bell-shaped helmet when struck by the clapper he wears in place of his left hand. He even has a tragic backstory. Brutally bullied as a child, weak and timid Lester Verd learns that the pen is indeed mightier than the sword. He grows up to become possibly the one thing worse than a supervillain, an unethical journalist. Muckraker Lester hitches his star to Mildred Horowitz and his band, the most outrageous rock group of the early 1970s. An affectionate nod to Alice Cooper. In the midst of a rollicking rock concert, a prop guillotine goes wrong and Lester's hand is severed. Twisted but driven by his terrible accident, Lester dons a bell helmet and dubs himself Dr. Bong. His ominous castle, with its gadget-packed laboratory, is intimidating. It's also all fabrication. Dr. Bong admits that barely any of the machines are hooked up, and those that are produce little more than flashing lights and whirling sounds. Image is everything, he explains to a captive Beverly Switzler, Howard's human girlfriend. Cyril, Dr. B, commands an awesome array of powers. Genetically mutated animal men heed his every command. He could teleport his castle to distant locations and cause mass hallucinations. My whim is canon. My authority inexpugnable, he announces, preparing to punch himself in the face so as to activate his awesome abilities. Sadly, Bong's comical appearance, melodramatic delivery, and unsettling menagerie of half-animal assistants served him poorly in the long run. More recent appearances of the character have unfortunately reduced him to a broadly comical caricature of a supervillain. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, and now... after that double feature of all errors, we put the tome back in the tomb for the night as we leave you with six members of the Legion of Regrettable Supervillains. Okay, we have a few minutes left. What happened to Mad? He said it was going to be a few minutes, and he missed all this good shit tonight. I hope you enjoy the excursions into the tomb, for the tomb, or the tome from the tomb, I mean. It's been a long day. I'm sorry about that. All right. So let's get ready to pack it in. Before I run out of time, I want to thank you all for tuning in tonight. You guys rock. Without you, it'd be mostly me and Mad talking to ourselves about things that we talk about to each other anyway during the week. But it's nice to have company along the way. These male villains are fucking mental. I think, I don't know what's worse, the villains or the ones who created them, thinking they'd be good super villains. Good Lord. the Giant Immortal Pirate. Who came up with that one? Oh, my. I thought that was a good idea. Good Lord. There's always one that takes the cake each week. So don't forget, read those comic books. Read those superhero novels. There are a bunch of them out there. Watch those genre TV shows and movies. And don't forget, if you have HBO Max this Friday, December 16th, if you haven't, I haven't seen it yet, Black Adam comes to TV. I get to watch it on my big screen TV Friday. I get to see the JSA on the big screen finally. I mean the real JSA. And then catch up on some TV shows. Oh, wait. I hear somebody. Oh, he's coming back for the big finale.
I am sorry.
Left in this
I am sorry. If shit.
You
missed. Yeah.
You missed a Howard the Duck supervillain.
Oh, God. Well,
Dr. Bong. I just read it like 2 minutes ago.
Dr.
I'm like,
Bong.
Where
I remember him.
I was like, where is Mad Viking? He's missing out. I read three extra ones. And I was like, oh, my God, he should be here for this one. Where is he? He's always talking about Howard the Duck, and I set it up perfectly, and you missed it.
Was rolling downhill faster than I wanted to.
It's all right. I got through the news. We did six entries. You missed a giant pirate, undead pirate. Well, he's dead. He went to hell, and it's like, it's a weird story. It's every time he fails, he grows another foot. He's like 300 feet tall because he's been around forever. Yeah, especially the giant pirate. Yeah, like nowadays, a giant immortal pirate. I could see it now. It's just the era they were written in. You know, they didn't have anything to base it off of back then. They didn't know, you know, the problem is they didn't know what they were doing back then. Nowadays, they've seen everything. It's like a giant immortal pirate. Holy shit, that'd be awesome. All right, I said my goodbyes. Anything you'd like to say in closing? Because we have 10 seconds.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie. Sorry, man. See you all next week. Do we have anything coming up? See you next week on Monday night.
No.
Stay super for another episode of Paragon Radio. And Mad's working fervently to get the Dawn Radio thing back up. I'm going to get the story out of him sooner or later this week or next week or sometime. You guys rock. We love you all. See you next time. All right. It's okay. About 20 minutes when my mom called. I was like, shit, hold on a minute. And everybody heard the call. I'm like, fuck. She goes, what time is your show over? Like 9:30, like always.
All right. Things are finally fixed.
Yes. Are they fixed?
Yeah. We're going to the new stream.
What's the new stream?
DawnRadio.dj-fritz.com at the moment. The name's going to be changed soon.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Let me log out of champions. Logging out of champions. I mean, City of Heroes. Okay, I'm out of City of Heroes. Alan's leaving. I'm still on the feed, so I don't think you want to talk about it on this, so.
No.
Okay.
All right, I will talk to you later.
Yeah, let me tell him I'm logging for it. Hold on. I'm just going back to Ren Center. I'll go there. Sorry. All right, going that way. Okay, I'll hang up the show. Sorry you had problems tonight. Hopefully next week you'll be better.
Yeah.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Have a good one.
Night. Yeah, bye.
Night. Bye.